WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A bill to fund the government and avoid a shutdown after Friday night that passed in the House will need some Democratic votes to pass in the Senate. Not likely, say Democrats, considering the budget cuts Republicans have included in the bill. President Trump's 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum went into effect today. This is a new CNN poll shows.
The majority of Americans, 61%, now say they disapprove of how the president is handling tariffs. 56% say they disapprove of his handling of the economy overall.
ABC's Mary Bruce, Trump dismissing criticism that the tariffs will hurt the U.S. economy, saying effects would be temporary. Hydraulic issues for SpaceX to scrub this evening's launch of a mission to return two astronauts from the International Space Station. They say they'll try again on Thursday. Kuwait releasing a group of six American prisoners, including veterans and military contractors, jailed for years on drug-related charges. The move seen as a gesture of goodwill between the two allies. This is ABC News. The latest inflation numbers may ease some recession worries.
Americans last month were paying 2.8% more for just about everything than they were in February of 2024. After days of heavy losses, a CPI report showing a decelerating rate of inflation pushed the stock market higher. But a dig into the numbers finds egg prices nearly 60% higher than a year ago.
ABC's Jim Ryan. The index also shows that egg prices again reached another record high in February. That's thanks to the avian flu. The cost of a dozen grade A eggs up more than 10% compared to a year ago. If prices remain high, it'll be the third year in a row consumers have faced sticker shock ahead of Easter and Passover. The Vatican says Pope Francis remains in stable condition in the hospital as he recovers from a complicated bout of double pneumonia. They say a chest X-ray performed yesterday confirmed improvements. The Pope's still on high-flow oxygen therapy during the day and non-invasive mechanical ventilation at night. Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, he would not be negotiating with the GOP if he was Wisconsin's sitting senator.
I want to clarify, like, I'm always happy to negotiate in good faith, but we're talking about a party that's not acting in good faith. We shouldn't be in a position where we're throwing a life raft to somebody who is hell-bent on sinking the entire ship.
Not something I want to be involved in.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose at the buzzer. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks had the lead, but Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton with a spectacular three-point shot, then draws a foul, gave the Pacers a 115-114 win over Milwaukee. Doc Rivers.
That's on us. I told our staff, you know, we got to have our guys prepared better for that. You can see screaming before the play. We're already off the bodies, so we're in trouble before the play started.
The Bucks have now lost three in a row. College hoops, for the second year in a row, the UW Green Bay women's team winning the Horizon League tournament. They beat Purdue Fort Wayne 77-63. The Phoenix now headed to the NCAA tournament. The Badgers men play tomorrow in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. Greg Gard says his team has put that loss at home to Penn State behind them.
So one nice thing about younger adults, they move on faster than a 50-some-year-old head coach does.
NFL cornerback Eric Stokes leaving the Packers, signing a one-year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Eric Stone Street is expanding his acting talents. The hilarious and Emmy-winning Stone Street, who played Cam on Modern Family for 9 seasons, has agreed to a role on Dexter. Stone Street will play Dexter's estranged brother, who he was separated from at a young age. You can catch Eric Stone Street on Dexter Sunday nights on Showtime. Hate speech and toxic social media users had to take a powder this past Monday when Twitter, also referred to as X, experienced outages, leaving anonymous users and bots with nowhere to spew their disinformation. depression. Angry young men who hide behind avatars and fake screen IDs probably experienced calm for the first time in the last few years. Better a Twitter malfunction than a Cybertruck. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow and warmer, highs upper 50s to 60. 65 to near 70 Friday, clouds thicken, some showers and even storms by night. Windy with rain to snow Saturday. It's 42 right now.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
How are the Trump policies going to affect agriculture? We'll find out with Zachiel Torres-Small, who was the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture in the Biden administration.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut. He didn't cut a game.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder in Wodak. I am also a citizen of the United States, and this is Native Roots Radio, and we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Haley Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This episode of Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations on Native Roots Radio is supported by the City of Minneapolis.
Yes, it is. And Minneapolis is a home to one of the largest urban Native American populations in the country. We're thankful to have these updates from Minneapolis American Indian Community Specialists. Here's guest host Christine McDonald. Welcome. Ho-wa.
Thank you, Robert. Miigwech. Buju, Ogadaki, Gabawit, Nindishnika, Zajijak, Nundungan. I'm Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. We are starting today's show with Russell Fujisawa, I hope I said that correctly, and the Director of Office of Police Conduct Review. And Russell, you're here today to talk about the Community Commission on Police Oversight, CCPO. I understand that the city is recruiting community members to serve on that commission. And we look forward to hearing more about the commission, what it does, and how our listeners can join. So welcome. And I would just like to start off by asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Again, my name is Russell Fujisawa. I'm the director of the Office of Police Conduct Review here at the City of Minneapolis. We fall under the Department of Civil Rights. Our office, the Office of Police Conduct Review, is really tasked with receiving and investigating allegations of police misconduct that are made by members of the public. Through our work and the investigations we conduct, the Office of Police Conduct Review is working really to strengthen the accountability measures, increase the transparency of our work, increase the transparency of the city, and really help the community navigate two sets of mandated reforms, at the state level through the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, as well as a pending consent decree at the federal level. Mm-hmm. I think, one of the important things to highlight when we discuss mandated reforms is that these are the floor, right, of the changes that need to be implemented and the change in operations. I think, my objective is to really blow past those, right, and mm-hmm. place the best practice, really leverage some of the experience, some of the experience that others in our department have as well, to really, identify and implement best practice that we can lift and fit from cities and municipalities across the country that have gone through this reform process.
Thank you. And what happens when someone files a complaint about police conduct?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to discuss is, you know, all the ways through which community members can file complaints. We try to make it as accessible as possible, and we're always working to build our community presence to limit and try to eliminate those barriers. As of right now, you can file complaints alleging police misconduct in person, either here at the Department of Civil Rights in City Hall, or at the public service building across the street. Knowing that coming downtown is not the most convenient option for people, we can also take complaints online through our complaint form. We can take them via email. You can call 311 and get directed to our office, or you can send a complaint, a hard copy, via USPS mail. But really, when we receive a complaint through any of those mechanisms, it is our duty by city ordinance to investigate all of those claims and those allegations. And, you know, whether or not they are within our jurisdiction of alleging misconduct against a Minneapolis police officer or any other surrounding municipality, a different city organization, it is our job as the Office of Police Conduct Review to either refer those out appropriately and communicate those referrals to complainants, or it is our job, if it is pertinent and in our jurisdiction, to investigate those thoroughly. And, you know, complaints can be, there are a number of outcomes with those complaints after our investigation. There is the potential that we dismiss them based on the evidence available. They can be referred to mediation, which will be a future option that we have to sort of put an officer and a complainant face-to-face in a mediation sort of situation or circumstance in which we can try to come to terms and have an agreement and maybe have some resolution there. They can be referred for non-disciplinary corrective action or coaching, or a complaint can make it all the way through to a full investigation in our office. And that's where we're doing our due diligence to thoroughly investigate based on policies, based on available evidence, interviewing witnesses and officers. So really doing justice to that investigative process to make sure that complainants are heard, the public is heard, and that we are doing our due diligence as an office, you know, where appropriate, to provide recommendations on you know, outcomes and discipline where it's appropriate, and where an officer was within policy and the conduct was good. We will also highlight that as well, right? Because we know this is a difficult job, and we want to keep the right officers encouraged to keep doing that work. And we want to hold the officers that are not abiding by policy, we want to hold them accountable.
Right. Thank you. I just want to bring up, I know that there is some other opportunities for people if they don't feel comfortable filing a report that way. I know specifically in my community, the American Indian community, we have a relationship, the city has a relationship with Indigenous Protectors Movement. And those folks in their office are also able to assist people in filing a police report or a complaint against an officer if they're not comfortable going through those other channels.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, we are looking for more options and opportunities to build that community presence, right? Because we know there are those barriers, whether they're historical, whether they're current, you know, socioeconomic, race, ethnicity, the number of barriers that are in place historically that have prevented people from, you know, feeling comfortable and even trusting the process. So the more that we can grow a presence, you know, through connections like that, or having our direct presence across civil rights. It's not just the Office of Police Conduct Review, right? It's labor standards and enforcement. It's the Complaint Investigation Division, which handles discrimination, anything really alleging discrimination against protected class. So we have a number of mechanisms, and, you know, the more that we can do to provide those services and access those services in community, the better.
Yep, I appreciate that. I appreciate that partnership. So can you tell us about the commission and how it actually came into being?
Yeah, thank you. The Community Commission on Police Oversight was really created through a passing of city ordinance at the end of 2022. And I think there was a recognition that this body, which has had a couple of different iterations and different names in the past, just needed a refresher and needed to be a little more responsive to community needs and sentiment. Additionally, the mandated reforms from the settlement agreement with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights also outlined some specific changes that needed to be made. But really, at its core, the CCPO, the Community Commission on Police Oversight, creates a public forum where, you know, we can ensure that as a city, The community is appropriately holding accountable police officers, policing operations, and doing that through policy and training recommendations, community engagement, holding public commission meetings, and just giving really a voice to the public and the community.
So you said that it was created through an ordinance at the end of 2022. For people who may have been around long enough, is this what ended up replacing the Civilian Review Authority?
I believe it replaced the PCOC. So that was the Police Commission on Office of, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, a lot of the.
Yeah, so many acronyms prior to my time, but there have been iterations. And so it has evolved in structure, in mission, in mandate as well.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Your heart beats for generations. Take care of it.
There's a lot that we can do to take care of ourselves. And so I think it's important to take the smaller steps and break it down into more manageable pieces, because the little steps leads to big changes.
Every beat of your heart tells a story of love, resilience, and hope. For Indigenous women, taking care of your heart means creating more moments with the ones you cherish. Let's protect that story. Learn more at hennepin.us/heart-beats.
In a galaxy not so far away, the battle for truth rages on. Smart Wars is a solo exhibition by Rory Wakemup, a Minnesota Chippewa artist who flips the script on Star Wars using humor and regalia. Wakemup challenges colonial narratives and reclaims indigenous values of balance, resilience, and environmental activism. This exhibition runs February 27th through April 5th at All My Relations Arts in Minneapolis. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org.
Support for Native Roots Radio comes from the Walker Art Center, an art space that's more than the spoon and cherry. Galleries celebrate contemporary visual art, including Indigenous artists like Edgar Heap of Birds, Cheyenne and Arapaho Nation, and Jim Demony, Ojibwe. Additionally, films screen in the cinema, and performances are shown on stage. Free every Thursday night and free every day for members and citizens of tribal nations. Learn more at walkerart.org. Again, that's walkerart.org.
Have you considered a career in the museum field? The Minnesota Historical Society is now accepting applications for its Native American Museum Fellowship. The 10-week summer program is a mix of workshops, seminars, and hands-on internships at the Minnesota Historical Society. It is open to undergraduate students, recent graduates, and community scholars with an interest in museums and heritage studies. Learn more and apply now at mnhs.org/NAI.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode of Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations on Native Roots Radio, is supported by the City of Minneapolis. And here's guest host Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back. We are on our second segment tonight with Russell Fujisawa, who is the Director of Office and Police Conduct Review in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. And we are talking specifically about the Community Commission on Police Oversight. And I understand that the city is actually recruiting folks to become commissioners on that oversight committee. Can you tell us how many seats are actually on that committee and how many are open right now?
Yeah, so there are 15 total seats. There are currently three vacancies, which we're looking to fill before even the end of this term, at the end of May. But there is also an additional cycle of recruitment for all of the seats, the eight seats that will be open starting June 1st. So, you know, there's an opportunity to join right now. There's an opportunity to join, you know, starting June 1st at the start of the new term.
I know on some of our commissions at the city, certain seats are dedicated to like a mayoral appointee, or you live in certain districts. Does any of that apply for these ones?
There are two mayoral appointments, and outside of that, it is ward coverage. There is the caveat that you do not need to live in that particular ward through which you are appointed. It is really just sort of the allocation across those seats by ward. So just because you don't live in a ward does not mean you can't apply to that opening.
Do you have to live in the city?
You do have to live in the city. There can be some waivers to that requirement, but it is a case-by-case scenario. I won't say it will disqualify you from being eligible, but it is very much case by case on those waivers.
So possibly if somebody worked at a community serving organization and is really involved in the community, they might be able to get a waiver and serve. So, but mostly residents of the city is what we're looking for.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, you know, we want to have the right people and the right voices on the committee. And you know, if there is a case for an individual that, you know, is very representative of a particular community that has been disproportionately impacted by this subject in the past, and it makes sense, then, you know, that is definitely a conversation we should be having. But to your other point, too, we want it to be a representative body for the city, right, and for mm-hmm. community members that are directly impacted by public safety policies and the work that we do in the Office of Police Conduct Review.
Thank you. Can you tell us more about what the commissioners do?
Yeah, so commissioners, they have a few distinct roles, and some of those are very explicitly outlined in the ordinance. It's a little dry in the language there, mm-hmm. But essentially, commissioners are reviewing police policies and providing recommendations on those policy changes to, you know, city council, to the mayor, to the police chief. And this is a really critical time and mm-hmm. forum for that, because the Minneapolis Police Department and other departments across the city right now, in response to the settlement agreement and other reforms, are putting out, you know, a large volume of policies that will be the foundation of public safety operations, you know, moving forward. So it's really a critical time to have input there. The commission also participates in the police misconduct review process. As a civilian commissioner, you can potentially sit as a review panelist and review cases of misconduct that come through either the Office of Police Conduct Review or Internal Affairs, and make recommendations to the chief of police in terms of, you know, whether or not a case has merit and recommendations on discipline. You also have the opportunity to contribute to the annual performance review of the chief of police, which is something that is explicitly stated in the ordinance as one of the requirements and one of the capacities of the commission. I think one of the probably the more important but sometimes understated opportunities is to conduct community outreach, right? As part of this commission, you have this unique position, you know, that sort of stands in community, but also with the city. So you are a unique bridge in, you know, the voice of the community, but also the work that's being done in the city. So mm-hmm. you can serve as that representative of both bodies in this capacity.
Are these volunteer positions?
They are volunteer positions. Okay. You cannot be an employee of the city. You are serving the city in a different capacity.
That's a great opportunity to get a lot of experience. I know there's a lot of times different misconceptions about what people do. Can you tell us what commissioners don't do?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an important distinction as well. You know, while commissioners are part of that accountability process and they have the ability to review cases and make those recommendations, commissioners are not investigating any of the claims that come through and the allegations that come through our office. They're not making decisions on discipline, right? That ultimately sits with the chief and his staff. And I think importantly, commissioners do not participate in the review of criminal cases. And neither does our office or internal affairs. Those are just solely misconduct investigations. Criminal investigations are handled by the appropriate authorities, you know, in the city and in the county.
Thank you. So what have you heard commissioners say is actually the best part of being on this commission?
Yeah, and there's a lot, right? There are a lot of different perspectives, there are a lot of different backgrounds of the commissioners that sit on the commission right now, but I think, you know, bringing together multiple perspectives, you know, understanding different lived experiences, understanding different personal, professional, racial, ethnic backgrounds, and how they are working together to drive a collective mission, right? And to help learn the city, or help teach the city about what the needs are of the community, in response to public safety needs. I think it's also a great opportunity too for individuals of the community that may have the opportunity to serve on this commission to learn about city operations and what goes on sort of behind the scenes, and get a closer look at some of the work being done. And I think to that other point about the work being done behind the scenes, we want to have less of that, right? We don't want it to be so much have this air of, you know, this mystery that goes on behind city operations and local government. We want to be transparent. That's why I'm here. That's why we try to be in community. That's why we try to make sure that there is easy access to our services for OPCR, but also for civil rights, and wherever we can really for the city.
You had said that there's they serve a 3-year term. Is that it? And then maxed out? Can they serve more than one term?
They can serve additional terms, right? They do have to, commissioners right now that are finishing out their term that would like to serve another term. They are required to submit their applications as well and go through the same process, because we want that cycle of reassessment. And I will also say the terms are staggered slightly so that we are not rolling off the entire commission, one day and clean slate. So we are a little more strategic and calculated with that, as other boards and commissions across the city are.
That's great. So how can they apply?
Yeah, so it's pretty easy. Just go to minneapolismn.gov/boards. And from there, you will see a list of all of the current boards and commissions that have openings. Just make sure you click on Community Commission on Police Oversight, because we really do feel that it's important that we staff this body with representatives of the community. I think historically, I don't want to speak for the entirety of the city and all boards and commissions, but I know for this one in particular, there is a need and a priority to be representative of the communities in Minneapolis, particularly those that have been disproportionately impacted historically and currently by practices that we've seen. So I think, you know, that's why I'm here, to try to encourage individuals of all communities to apply, because your voice needs to be heard, and we really value it.
Yeah. So, and when they go to that website, is it an actual application or do they upload a resume?
It is an application. That there will be a resume upload. There will be some application questions. It is very similar to, you know, a typical job application. So there will be some questions. There will be an opportunity to upload a resume. And then those applications are screened. And, you know, there are a number of departments across the city that are part of the selection committee. Again, we want that to be a representative body as well, to make sure that all of the right things and all the right people are being considered.
Great, thank you. So then lastly, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know about that would help them decide or help encourage them to apply for this commission?
Yeah, this is such a unique opportunity at such a unique time. You know, we have one set of mandated reforms, potentially two with a federal consent decree. The work that's done now, the people that have a hand in the foundation that's laid right now, are really critical to the long-term efficacy and sustainability of the work that next 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we need the right people, we need the right voices. We need to think of, you know, all of the potential circumstances and potential perspectives that need to be considered as we lay this groundwork. And I think this is an opportunity to have a very, very integral role in that, right? In the accountability process, in the ability to provide recommendations on policies, the community engagement, reviewing misconduct cases that come through our office. This is a really unique opportunity that I think will do a lot to improve the accountability and transparency of law enforcement practice and culture here in Minneapolis.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A bill to fund the government and avoid a shutdown after Friday night that passed in the House will need some Democratic votes to pass in the Senate. Not likely, say Democrats, considering the budget cuts Republicans have included in the bill. President Trump's 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum went into effect today. This is a new CNN poll shows.
The majority of Americans, 61%, now say they disapprove of how the president is handling tariffs. 56% say they disapprove of his handling of the economy overall.
ABC's Mary Bruce, Trump dismissing criticism that the tariffs will hurt the U.S. economy, saying effects would be temporary. Hydraulic issues forced SpaceX to scrub this evening's launch of a mission to return two astronauts from the International Space Station. They say they'll try again on Thursday. Kuwait releasing a group of six American prisoners, including veterans and military contractors, jailed for years on drug-related charges. The move seen as a gesture of goodwill between the two allies. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks lose at the buzzer. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks had the lead, but Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton with a spectacular three-point shot, then draws a foul, gave the Pacers a 115-114 win over Milwaukee. Doc Rivers.
That's on us and told our staff. You know, we got to have our guys prepared better for that. You can see screaming before the play. We're already off the bodies, so we're in trouble before the play started.
The Bucks have now lost three in a row. College hoops, for the second year in a row, the UW Green Bay women's team winning the Horizon League tournament. They beat Purdue Fort Wayne 77-63. The Phoenix now headed to the NCAA tournament. The Badgers men play tomorrow in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. Greg Gard says his team has put that loss at home to Penn State behind them.
So one nice thing about younger adults, they move on faster than a 50-some-year-old head coach does.
NFL cornerback Eric Stokes leaving the Packers, signing a one-year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Dolly Parton told Oprah Winfrey that she thought she would be a great mother. Parton elaborated, saying she and her recently deceased husband, Carl Thomas Dean, ultimately decided not to have kids because Parton wanted the freedom to pursue her career and be a mother to all children. That is so Dolly Parton. Parton said at one point they even had a name picked out if they had a girl, but decided against it. I'm guessing it was Dolly Jr.? Billy Joel is putting his health before his tour. The 75-year-old music icon has wisely chosen to postpone working the road so he can rehab after a recent medical procedure. Joel's camp says he will take 4 months away from performing to get his health back. Joel expects to make a full recovery and will resume his tour in Pittsburgh on July 5th of this year. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the upper 20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow and warmer. Highs upper 50s to 60. 65 to near 70 Friday. Clouds thicken, some showers and even storms by night. Windy with rain to snow Saturday. Currently it's 37.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Congressman Mark Pocan.
Already people can't get appointments as easily at the VA hospitals. Already farmers aren't getting their grants. Federal employees are losing their jobs. And this is just the real life ramifications of what's happening.
If you can't convey the impact of these cuts, the people that are getting bad information are just going to think he's just cutting wasteful spending.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning 6 until 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong, just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Producer Jess P.S. here. Next time, Dom's back with Earl Ingram as co-host to discuss the ever-expanding campaign for Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Join us.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh-ho, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode of Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations on Native Roots Radio is supported by the City of Minneapolis. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And tonight, our second guest is Shunu Suresa, who is our Senior Advisor for Human Trafficking Prevention. She is here to talk about sex trafficking awareness, prevention, and resources for community members. Welcome, Shunu.
Thank you so much, Christine. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you again. Can you tell us about yourself and what you do at the city?
Absolutely. Well, good afternoon to your viewers and listeners. And once again, thank you so much for the time. My role in the city is that of a senior advisor. My primary duty, job duty, is to implement the city's blueprint on human trafficking and exploitation, which we produced in active collaboration with internal stakeholders and external stakeholders for over 3 years. We submitted the blueprint to the city on June 28 of 2021. And since then, I've been working in active partnership with community organizations and internal city departments in implementing their recommendations in the blueprint. I oversee a portfolio of work in that I oversee a portfolio of work that intersects with human trafficking and exploitation with many different departments, one being this new initiative, the Sex Trafficking Thrives in Silence, which is a collaboration between Minnesota Department of Health and Minneapolis Public Health Department and the department that I'm housed in, which is Racial Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging.
Thank you. Can you tell us, how is the city working to raise awareness about sex trafficking?
For those who have always considered human trafficking to be only a public safety issue, we are shifting away from that narrative. And for the last 10 years or so, under the leadership of Minnesota Department of Health and many other partners in the community, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, the Advocates for Human Rights, the LINC, the Family Partnership, Breaking Free, all these organizations under their stellar leadership, we have reframed the issue of human trafficking to be public health issue. It's a human rights issue. It's of course public safety issue, and it's of course a human services issue. And it's on all of us to act, to learn the signs and symptoms of human trafficking through awareness, through education, through training, through different forms of capacity building in different organizations, to help find survivors the help they need so that they do not feel trapped in the situations which they call the life, but these exploitative situations in which they find themselves. In the city, we've created the city web page where we have linked different resources to those in quote unquote the life and for the community to again to learn about these signs and symptoms. And that page is Minneapolis.mn/human-trafficking-resources.
Yes.
Sorry, sometimes I get it mixed up. And because awareness is such a crucial piece of educating community members, educating victim survivors about the resources that exist in the community, we felt compelled to develop this campaign, Sex Trafficking Thrives in Silence. So we are getting this information primarily to victim survivors, say, so they know that there are resources if they so choose to leave these exploitative situations. And when I say choose to, we do not want to force resources and services on people. Folks who are victims and survivors have been forced. They've lost autonomy. They've lost their, they're forced to lose their agency, which is why we want victim survivors to feel that they can choose to receive services and not be forced these services on them. So this is one way of the city working to raise awareness on sex trafficking and sexual exploitation. And there are many other ways that the city is proactive in combating human trafficking and exploitation in all its forms. One of the things that the Office of Community Safety is currently doing is it has released a RFP, which is request for proposal, to solicit proposals from different community organizations to provide services out of Southside Community Safety Center and provide training to law enforcement and other city staff. And the RFP was released on March 7th, and it closes on April 1st of 2025. So we really encourage all your listeners, community organizations, or survivors, if they are eligible, and of course they can find all this information on the city's e-portal about their eligibility. And we highly encourage everyone who are eligible to apply to these funds, so we are better prepared to provide the appropriate services that the victims and survivors need in our community.
And then just to refresh people's memory, the Southside Community Safety Center is going to be the permanent structure off of like 26th Avenue. I can't remember the cross street, but it's going to house these different services. And so now is the opportunity to get in on that RFP to be the one to provide those services at that location, right?
Correct. Okay. So Southside Community Safety Center will house many different services, including the services, the direct services to victims of human trafficking and exploitation. What that means is through this RFP, we will award funds to organizations in community organizations who will be providing services out of this safety center.
Great, thank you. And can you just do a little bit of why, get behind the why the city's doing this campaign now?
Yeah, absolutely. Christine, as you might be aware, there's a greater awareness about the overlap of substance use disorder and human trafficking exploitation, especially in organizations that provide services to victims and survivors of human trafficking. What we discovered is that very little awareness and education is there, especially among treatment providers. I have worked in drug services, and victim survivors have disclosed to me and other people throughout the state of Minnesota and elsewhere as well, is that they when they go to seek services in different clinics, different locations for their substance use disorder, the treatment providers are not very well knowledgeable or have little information on their other victimization, that is human trafficking and exploitation. What that means is then that this person is not receiving coordinated and holistic care. And what that means is that then they find themselves back in these situations again and again. So what with this campaign, two things. Number one, destigmatize the substance use disorder and human trafficking and exploitation, people who are experiencing both, and educate victim survivors, of course, that there is help if they if they so choose to seek help, receive help, and generate greater awareness within treatment providers. So we did a convening back in 2023 with the funding from Minnesota Department of Health. Again, that initiative was an active collaboration between Minneapolis Public Health and Racial Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Department. Mm-hmm. And in that convening too, the panel and folks who participated overwhelmingly disclosed that they need services, they need holistic care, they need their service providers to better coordinate these services for them, and that less education is out there in different cultural communities about these overlapping issues. So we reached out to Minnesota Department of Health, which then funded this campaign, which is an extension off of the convening that we did in 2023. So this is again to generate greater awareness on this overlapping issue and destigmatize, so people are feeling that they can seek help, and that also to generate this greater empathy and compassion in community members, so they see people who have substance use disorder and human trafficking and exploitation mm-hmm. as other victimization from that lens. So that's what we are hoping to do through this campaign.
I really appreciate hearing that. There's so many times in conversations that I see just the siloed work happening where mm-hmm. we're approaching an issue just on focusing on people who are unhoused. Mm-hmm. or we're just focusing on the substance use disorder. And mm-hmm. I know in our community, we try to bring everybody into that conversation because we absolutely see how it all intersects. So mm-hmm. that along with the mental health and the trafficking and all of it. So yeah, I really appreciate that that conversation is happening together. Mm-hmm. So thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, absolutely, Christine. I think this campaign is so special in that we actually convened a group of folks, who have lived experience, those mm-hmm. with lived experience, survivors with lived experience, to provide feedback on how this campaign should be. And as a result, the product that we were made out of this campaign are put in bus shelters, billboards across the city, which you may have seen at places. Mm-hmm. We are so proud of what we have produced out of this process.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. I think we're going to move into our break.
We're going to go. Yeah, right on, Christine. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP, along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a to-go card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. 612-373-3333.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Support for Native Roots Radio comes from the Walker Art Center, an art space that's more than the spoon and cherry. Galleries celebrate contemporary visual art, including Indigenous artists like Edgar Heap of Birds, Cheyenne and Arapaho Nation, and Jim Demony, Ojibwe. Additionally, films screen in the cinema, and performances are shown on stage. Free every Thursday night and free every day for members and citizens of tribal nations. Learn more at walkerart.org. Again, that's walkerart.org.
Your heart beats for generations.
Your heart is so many things. It beats all the time.
And it works very hard to keep you moving through your day, keeping your thoughts clear. It's the most important organ in your body.
Every beat of your heart tells a story of love, resilience, and hope. Taking care of your heart means creating more moments with the ones you cherish. Learn more at hennepin.us/heart-beats. That's hennepin.us/heart-beats.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
American Indian Relations on Native Roots Radio is supported by the City of Minneapolis, and we're back now with guest host Christine McDonald.
Thank you. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And tonight our guest is Sunu Saresta. She's the Senior Advisor for Human Trafficking Prevention at the City of Minneapolis. And before we went to break, we were talking about how when some folks go to seek out services outside of their specific issue around trafficking, like if they're looking for substance use support, folks don't actually know what to look for or recognize signs that people may have that they are in the middle of trafficking or at the hands of a trafficker. Can you tell us what some of those signs that people should be on the lookout are?
Absolutely. So some of the signs, and it's a host of signs. There are many things. And the issue of trafficking and exploitation are ever evolving. So there are trends that are changing with technology. It certainly continues to look different every year, and it continues to look different in different demographics, whether that be age, whether that be different cultural communities, whether that be in different other communities with folks with disabilities. So it is very important for us to be mindful of that. The point being that if I lay out certain signs, that might not actually be true for all people. But some of the signs, the general signs that are more applicable to everybody is signs of physical abuse or neglect. For someone, young people missing school regularly, or adults or people who are working, missing work regularly without any reasons, without valid reasons. If you are meeting somebody, asking about their situation, they're telling you inconsistent stories or stories that feel very rehearsed, or if you are if the person is in presence of someone else, if they seem fearful, if the other person is constantly interrupting and answering on behalf of the person. So these are some of the signs, but then also someone who's dating, a young person dating someone much, much older, a young person who has valuables that are beyond their reach, right? Beyond the reach of their family. A young person who dresses much older, dresses in a very sort of sexualized manner, and someone who is constantly running away from home, someone who is homeless. Again, these are indicators in combination with other things are certainly signs that we can pay attention to. And we continue to see many other new trends and signs that constitute human trafficking and exploitation in general.
I think I'm thinking back when you're mentioning some of the signs to look out for. I remember when I first started learning more about trafficking and what it looked like compared to what people think it always looks like. It's not always something that you're going to see out on a very public corner or street. And the whole, I think they call it like the boyfriend effect. Young, like you mentioned, somebody maybe really young dating somebody that's way older than them. Or I remember learning how people will receive gifts. Like you said, they'll have something that is like outside of what they would normally be able to attain, and how then that is turned into, now you owe me. Like, I gave you all these things and now you owe me. So it just makes me think how sometimes even they, people themselves may not right away recognize that they're in a trafficking situation.
Yeah, or in an exploitative situation, which is why it's so important to meet people where they're at and not necessarily put label on people. What we've seen is when we define a victimization for people or label them with all these different categories of victimization, we tend to push people away, which is why when they are ready to seek services, whatever services they need. Most of the organizations in Minnesota, we've done a really good job of meeting people where they're at. That is actually the basic foundation of what the system, especially the infrastructures in Minnesota, is built on through Safe Harbor programs, which is the statewide programs funded by Minnesota Department of Health or the state, and provides services to victims of sexual exploitation and sex trafficking, and now labor trafficking as well. But the services certainly stops at 24. But then there are other programs that do continue to provide services to people of all ages. And none of the organizations that are providing services are forcing these label on people. If a young person feels that they are empowered by the choices that they have made, it's not for an organization to belittle them on their choices, because that will only push the person away. So it is very important to be mindful of how and where we meet people without being condescending.
Yeah, I understand. Can you share what some resources are that are available to victims?
So there are several resources that are available to victims. I do want your listeners to be aware of this excellent resource, which is the Day One Hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. And this is a 24/7 crisis hotline that victims or community members can call and learn more about what the resources are there in the community, or find resources for themselves or someone that they know are in exploitative situations or are being trafficked. The Family Partnerships Pride Program, the West Regional Navigator at the Link, a Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, you can send anonymous tips to them. And all of these resources can be found on our Human Trafficking Awareness web page, which is again minneapolismn.gov/human-trafficking-resources.
Thank you. And then also one last time, if you have how people can access the RFP in response to the service provider opportunity at the Southside Community Safety Center?
So the RFP is available in the city's e-portal system. And I can also find the RFP and send that to you, Christine.
Sure.
You can share that via air or through whatever communications mechanisms that you have in place to your listeners and viewers.
Yes, I definitely am able to do that. We just have a couple of minutes left, or 1 minute left. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
I think what I said earlier about destigmatizing these issues, I think human trafficking is an outcome of so many other underlying factors. And we need to be able to not only talk about human trafficking as an issue that originates in a silo, but rather talking about it through these intersectional pieces and lenses. So addressing homelessness, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, mental health issues, unemployment, so many different factors really drive people, put people into these situations. So I really want all of us to be more comprehensive in our approach whenever we are talking about any of these things.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Maggie Dawn.
At 2:30, we'll be joined by Chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Ben Wickler, to talk about the people versus Elon Musk, our billionaire overlord. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Tom from Monona. I love this one. He says, this is Tom. I like to rub my feet together and drink milk out of the cow. Listen, we'd all spoon ourselves if we could, just for some affection. But rubbing your feet together, as I mentioned last week, is the closest thing to self-cuddling. It's just a relaxing, and Tom wants to do that, apparently laying under the udder of a cow. That is the idea of a chill evening on Fat Tuesday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency ordered by a federal judge to hand over key documents that may shed light on the group's attempt to reduce the size of the federal government. The DOGE firings of thousands of federal workers was the subject of a hearing today in federal court in Maryland. The judge asking a lawyer for the administration exactly how many probationary workers have been fired so far. The attorney forced to say he didn't know. A Friday night government shutdown seems more likely after Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said today that Senate Democrats will not provide the votes to pass the House-approved deal to fund the government.
Funding the government should be a bipartisan effort, but Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input from congressional Democrats.
President Trump increasing tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports to 25% as he vows to take back wealth he says was stolen by other countries. This is ABC News.